Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duren.
Thanks for joining me again for Pastor Talk. This is Marty Duren, and I am super happy to have Ed and Kathy Litton today on the podcast together. So I've interviewed both of you guys separately. I'm really happy that you're on here together. Welcome to Pastor Talk again.
And well, we're glad to be here too, Marty.
And you get two for the price of one. Wait, is there a price here?
Yeah, it's the same as before, zero.
Okay, there we go.
I was still looking for that.
I can send you a check with a zero on it. I've done it before. So you guys are, you're not in Anchorage. You're in Mobile, Alabama, is that right?
It's a lot like Anchorage.
It is.
In
no,
some
it's
ways.
Not. There's people and water.
There's fish and water. I have been a pastor at a church called Redemption Church, Southern Baptist Church in Mobile, for almost 24 years.
Good night. I don't guess I realized that. But you've only pastored two churches, right? One in Arizona somewhere, and then that one, is that right?
Yes, I planted a church in Arizona. Was there for 7 years.
Yeah. So. Okay. Kathy, you are involved with something to do with women's ministry or pastor's wives ministry or something. Correct me for everybody.
I will correct you, Marty. I do work for the North American Mission Board, and currently my assignment is director of planter spouse care and development. So I made a transition. I had an assignment as a consultant for pastor's wives earlier, but because NAMPS tightened their focus on church planning, we have tightened our focus on training and developing planter's wives.
Okay, awesome. So both of you have been on before for different subject matter, but you have a really unique story. Kathy, I was going through my garage again the other day and found that tape that I think I actually sent you a picture of one time of Rick speaking at the Nationwide Bible Conference, I think it was, in Bellevue years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was familiar with Rick. So you guys are old enough. You and Ed are old enough to, if somebody just meets you and doesn't know your story, they're going to assume you've been married for 20 or 25 or 30 years. But you haven't. You've been married for six or seven?
Eight.
Okay. I see you jumped in there, so Ed didn't have a chance to butcher that
answer. I know.
Answer.
Ed, that was on the tip of his tongue, I'm sure.
So you guys have not been married that long, and as it has happened in your lives, you came to know each other and to be married because of two really tragic events, one in each of your lives. So, Ed, I'm going to start with you. Both of your previous spouses were killed, not just that they, had an illness and died, but they were killed in tragic accidents. So why don't you give a little bit about your first marriage, talk about your wife, and then what happened, and then I'll switch over to Kathy, and then we'll kind of talk about once you met and all those good things.
Yeah, Tammy and I had just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary in 2007. She was a church planner's wife and then a pastor's wife here in Mobile. We were raising our family. Our kids were right at a transition phase. Our two boys were in college. Our daughter was 13. Tammy was a professional oboist, and she played for several symphonies and very talented, perfect pitch, amazing sense of humor. And she was just a great friend and a great lady. And she had a very practical view of life that I really enjoyed. We did our house was full of laughter and a lot of joy. And she was taking our daughter, who she had been developing as a cello player, to Southern Miss University for an audition with a professor there. Kayla had kind of outpaced her local teachers, and so they were on their way over there. And halfway between Mobile and Hattiesburg, there was a truck left in the middle of the road. Apparently, she didn't see it. She slammed in the back of it and was killed instantly. Mm. And it was a totally new trajectory for our lives. It has obviously impacted us, our church, my children. And that was a traumatic moment. What I tell people, though, is that God was faithful, and he was faithful in every step of that journey, continues to be faithful today, and he cannot be otherwise.
Now, Kathy, you and Rick were married for how long?
25 years as well. We were just about a week away from our 26th wedding anniversary.
And what happened with that situation?
We were leaving Denver, Colorado to go on a family vacation, and we were pulling a boat across Kansas. And my son Justin, Rick, and I are in one car. My son and daughter and Rick's nephew were following behind. And there was a piece of metal in the highway that caused a blowout, and we were in a very dramatic car accident. Mm-hmm. And so it was traumatic for all of us, for Justin and I being in it, and then my kids watching it all. And so like Tammy's death, Rick died instantly, and Justin and I really escaped from the accident. And that was in 2002. And he was pastor of Riverside Baptist Church in Denver at that time. And that had been a really special place for us.
And he was pastor there when I heard him speak. And I remember the phone call, because I had mentioned Rick's name several times to the church I was pastoring in reference to that talk more than once. And I remember the phone call. A church member said, "Hey, you know, is this the guy that you talked about? I think the article maybe in Baptist Press was then." And it was like I had been sucker punched, and I'd never met the man. He just had such an impact on me through that one talk, literally, that I felt like I'd been hit in the face with something. So it was traumatic, certainly not in the sense that it was for you, but for me as an outsider, I have very few of those kinds of responses when people die. I'm not the guy that, you know, when a celebrity dies, I tear up. But that one impacted me. So did you guys know each other at all previous to your spouses being killed?
No, we had never met, and our paths, you know, best we can tell, never crossed before.
And Marty, I was a little like you. I knew of Rick. Rick and I had both served as first vice president of the SBC.
Okay.
We were on kind of parallel tracks. We knew a lot of the same people. Mm-hmm. We had similar friends, but we never met each other. And I also remember when Rick was killed. And I remember praying for the Ferguson family. Mm-hmm. And I'd actually talked to a staff member looking for trying to fill a position, who had been at Riverside. So I got a little closer to it, you know, and I remember asking him how Rick's wife was doing and how his children, and this is before Tammy died.
So it was a number of years. Now, Kathy, did you even, at this point, did you even know where Alabama was? I mean, had you ever seen it on a map?
I'd never been in Alabama.
Where are you from? Are you from Colorado?
Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri area.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So. Is that near Republic? Is Republic in Southwest Missouri?
Yes.
Okay. I have a friend there, actually. One.
I'm glad to hear you.
That's good.
One.
Actually, that's very encouraging, Marty, that you have a friend.
Yeah. I point that out, and I will make sure he hears this episode, too, so that he'll know. So how long was it before y'all met? Did somebody introduce y'all, or did y'all meet like at the SBC where everybody else does? I mean, how did that come about?
A friend, of mine felt like that.
Going in an eHarmony direction.
No, I know. A friend of mine felt like that maybe First Baptist Northville Beale, the name of the church at the time, might could use some thoughts and advice of going through grief on. And so she reached out to the executive pastor, and then he emailed me, and we just talked about grief of the church, grief for Ed, and things like that. And then about 9 months later, I came down and spoke at an event, and then we met each other for the first time then.
Okay. So did your friend know what she was up to?
Probably. Notice I'm not naming this friend.
I noticed. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
So was it love at first sight, or was it like, good grief, what weird people we are?
Well, let me just tell you something. In grief, it is an odyssey. Mm-hmm. Nothing is normal. And your last reference to dating or even thinking about another person goes back to the teens and early 20s. Mm-hmm. So it's a strange world. There's a lot of different emotions involved with it.
In other words, it didn't get off to a good start.
Yeah, it didn't start off good.
So
I'm kind of foaming the runway for a crash landing.
He's preaching yeah, into yeah, it.
You know,
and the phrase preaching means you're saying something till you actually find something to say.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of that scene. I'm going to butcher the movie now. The Tom Hanks movie, Sleepless in Seattle. I'm reminded of that scene where I think he's talking to Rob Reiner. You know, Tom Hanks' wife has died, and he doesn't know how to go back into the dating world. He doesn't know how to ask anybody out. He doesn't know. Do you call them? Do you show up at their house? Whatever. So I can imagine that it's odd, especially as old as you were, Ed, trying to.
yeah, and it is. It's extremely odd and uncomfortable. And then as a pastor, I mean, good grief, how do you do that? And
yeah, because nobody's watching.
Oh yeah.
Marty, when I would come down and visit him, we had more boundaries and security systems set up. 14-year-old boys and girls.
Well, the other side of it, too, is we both have 3 children apiece. Rick and Kathy had 3, and Tammy and I had 3.
Okay.
But my youngest was still, she was 13 when Tammy was a kid. And so she was still at home, and that added a whole different oddity to it. And I'll tell you an interesting story in that. When we had met and, you know, we talked and as things progressed in our conversation and relationship, One day I was praying. I said, Lord, I'm terrified to talk to Kayla about this because I don't know how she's going to respond. And so I prayed. I said, Lord, have her bring this subject up in a conversation. It probably wasn't a week that we were having dinner. And she said, Dad, do you ever think you'll get remarried? And so I started giving her this. I mean, I was overwhelmed. I started crying. I said, you know, I gave her this theological discussion. And she looked at me and she goes, well, Mom told me you would.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean? She said, about a month before her mom died, she said, Kayla, if anything ever happens to me, you need to know that your dad will likely remarry and he will need someone. And she probably added, you know, men are that way. But and the funny part, though, is I looked at Kayla and I said, I was just blown away. I'm wiping snot from my face. And she said, Dad, just make me a promise. And I said, what? And this is a 14-year-old girl, mm-hmm. you know. And I said, what? She goes, don't marry a bimbo. I said, well, I'm Dr. Ed Litton. I don't marry bimbo. She goes, Dad, you're a man.
Wow.
I'll never.
She called you out, buddy.
Well, she did. And
really, she called out all men.
Oh, come on right now.
There. Yes.
But you know, the truth of God's advanced provision for all things mm-hmm. is what that story really illustrates, mm-hmm. that God had prepared before the foundations of the earth. The one overwhelming sense I had when I got to the crash scene, Kathy was in the crash scene, I got to ours about 45 minutes later, was just the passage of scripture that says it's appointed unto a person once to die. And I knew that this was not an accident, it was an appointment. And there was a strange comfort in that and a very disturbing aspect of that too. I thought, how could God let me hurt so bad? And so I had to work through all those things, but it was interesting in the years since to see God's provision of Kathy in our lives and bringing us into her life.
You know, Marty, one thing that neither one of us talked about too much, but we both deeply, deeply grieved. And I can't speak for the total depths of Ed's grief, but I went into some very dark places. And the God that I had served and loved and worshiped was behaving so wildly and so unpredictably. I mean, my faith came under great attack and challenge. And, you know, it was a lot of work and grief. And I think Ed would say the same thing, maybe choose different words. But we very much know the reality of the sting of death.
Isn't it, is it safe to say that people grieve similar things in different ways, and we really need to be careful about how we evaluate how people are grieving?
Yes, by all means. I think it's you know, the stages of grief are very popular for people when they're studying grief. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting to study something you're terrified of because you tend to hold on to thoughts and ideas that are not helpful at all. Excuse me.
Well, you know what, too? I think we both would agree with this. I understood that the Christian community sometimes doesn't grieve well because we don't understand it. We want to slap plastic victories on top of gaping wounds, and we use a lot of trite language. And obviously, you know, I look back with regret of my counsel, my words to hurting people, because you can't know what you don't know. And we speak to grief a lot of times from inexperience, and that just makes grief more difficult.
I heard a guy say a number of years ago that you can't quantify pain. So I could never tell you, oh, you're hurting too much, and you could never tell me you're not hurting enough, because each person's experience with separation and pain is so radically different that it seems like the best thing to do a lot of times is just be there, to listen, you know, hang out, whatever.
Well, Job's friends had it right up until they opened their mouths.
Yeah, just being there, that was a good start when they were quiet for a week, wasn't it?
But you know what? I think we understand that when the Bible says we don't grieve as those that have no hope,
right,
it doesn't suggest that we're not grieving, but we do have hope in our grieving, but the process is still real. And grief has changed me profoundly, and it was much needed change in my life, much needed.
Wow. Same here. I think the key in the verse you just quoted was that we don't grieve as those who have no hope. The problem is too many of us read that to mean we're not supposed to grieve.
Yeah.
And we have to grieve theologically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a term that I used in my grief process early on. And it kind of surprised my friends. They said, what do you mean? I said, well, I have to take whatever emotion I'm experiencing at this moment, and I have to compare it to the Word of God. And I have to right myself on God's word. And I agree with Kathy. It was dark. It was extremely dark for me, to the point of wanting to take my life.
Wow.
And not wanting to go on. But at the same time, I got to tell you, as a kid, I remember reading a book about Teddy Roosevelt and how he lost his wife and mother on the same day, and how he fled to the Badlands of the Dakota Territory with his grief. And grief drives a man, especially, to run. And so that was my first impulse, was to run like a wounded animal. But I had a daughter, and in more ways than one, she saved me. She saved me from doing what every impulse in my existence and my being wanted to do. And that discipline of theological thought, the discipline of the practical daily living. And here's the other thing, too. I tried. I'll tell you how long in just a second, but I tried to keep up with Tammy, to do all the things that a mom does. And about 10 seconds later, I was exhausted. and so I realized I could not, it was not a matter of replacing her. I was just fighting for survival. And yet that fight was a part of God's plan that really has made our grief healthy. And it's taken a long time to be able to say that it was healthy, and not perfectly healthy, but it was healthy because it's produced something.
One thing that I have appreciated about my friendship with you guys is that you're both open to express love, appreciation, admiration, everything for your first spouses, and that you're not afraid of what, well, if I, you know, Kathy talks about Rick too much, Ed's going to be jealous. Or if Ed talks about Tammy too much, Kathy's going to be jealous. But you seem, both of you are comfortable encouraging each other and remembering the long and blessed relationships that you had before. Was that something you had to work into? Did it come normally? Or was it just like, I can't not talk about them, so we're going to have to figure this out?
Well, getting married a second time in your 50s, there's a lot of work in marriage, and we have had a lot of work to do in marriage. But from my perspective, this part of our marriage came very easily and naturally. We never sat down and discussed our former spouses and what our strategy was going to be on that. It just became so normalized to us. I know people don't understand this, but we haven't had to stop loving our former spouses to love each other. Mm-hmm. And I live in the world in which Tammy Litton lived. I'm in her home, and I see the beauty of her life and who she was to this family, to her church, to this community. And I see remnants of who she is. And I just want to tell you, I celebrate that. I look in the eyes of her daughter nearly every day until she got married and see a beautiful young woman who's living out so much of who her mom was. And maybe it's a complete protection, a miracle of God, but I think neither one of us are intimidated by those memories. And, you know, they've made us who we are. Our former spouses help us be the people we are now. It would be like cutting off your leg. But I love Ed Litton. And, you know, Marty, as much as I still grieve the loss of Rick Ferguson, I've had a rare opportunity to be married to two really amazing men. And I don't take that lightly.
Yeah.
Nor do I. I think that we never had a sense that we had to forsake our first love. And I want to tell you this, the other thing we both have remarked to each other, Marty, is that our love for Rick and our love for Tammy have actually grown. Mm. We have a deeper, more profound appreciation for who they are.
That's really cool.
And that they both still exist, mm-hmm. and that we will be together again. And I tell guys all the time, you can be in love with two women at the same time as long as one of them lives in heaven.
But he also says he'll never marry again, Marty. So I don't know what that means.
Well,
you know,
I do.
I know exactly what
it means.
Yeah, it's like lightning is struck twice for this idiot. And people stand in amazement. They go, look, we never figured out how you got Tammy, much less Kathy. What's the deal?
Hey, were you afraid of Kathy when you first met her? Because I'm afraid of her now.
Marty!
You know, I don't know if I was, I have grown in my fear. No, she's an amazing woman and has an amazing capacity. I think, you know, it's interesting. If we were engineering our lives, I think we would look for certain things, but God knows exactly mm-hmm. what we need.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I disagree with what he thinks I need, mm-hmm. but in fact, he's a genius, and I praise him for his provision in spite of me.
So I'm going to ask this question, and you feel free, either or both of you feel free not to answer it. What was the biggest challenge after you married each other, having been through what you'd been through? Did you realize that you hadn't healed as much as you needed to? Was it a matter of it didn't matter if you didn't get married for five more years, you weren't going to heal anymore until you took a next step? Was there something after you got married, you're like, oh, man, I didn't see this one coming. Is there a thing that sticks out as the biggest challenge that you had? And if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine.
Well, I will say, and I've already said, we have done a lot of hard work in our marriage. And that was grueling at times. Mm-hmm. And it was probably frightening at times. But, Marty, you know, I remember Rick Ferguson and I did a lot of work in our marriage, mm-hmm. too. And when you've been married 25 or 26 years, you tend to put all that stuff in the rearview mirror and forget. And then when they die, you can romanticize where you were. Yeah. But I knew in my head, I have already done this once.
Right.
I've already been in this journey. And
I've already had to train one man.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like a remedial course sometimes. Okay, I got a C minus the first time. Now I'm getting a chance at it again.
But you know what? God has brought so much beautiful fruit out of our work and God's work in us and bringing us into oneness. And it, you know, we're revisiting marriage lessons we already went through once. And it honestly, marriage is a brutal and beautiful process. And it's the oneness that we have tasted in the last few years has come as a result of the work of God and us. Really, we couldn't pretend everything was perfect. We had to work through it like mm-hmm. every marriage that's ever existed.
Yeah. There's no escaping the reality that marriage is sanctification. sanctification.
That's right.
It's part of God's sandpaper work in our lives to that he's not finished with us. And so that's a part of his greater grace.
You know what? Just like Rick made me a better person, Ed Litton is making me a better person. I need him in my life. We're uniquely different. Rick and I were uniquely different. And those differences obviously are a little uncomfortable in certain points. But the more we lean into that and the process of sanctification, it really is doing a great work in me. I can't speak for him, but
it is in me. And I will tell you, too, that the other thing that because you don't just go through grief by yourself, you're in a family unit and there's dysfunction in that. Mm-hmm. And we have had to face those types of issues. And it's just been amazing the grace God has given and the wisdom he's given through Kathy. She has, and I hate to use the term perfect, but she has really knocked the ball out of the park with my daughter. She just seemed to have a sense of when and when not to do things, right, and when to push, when not to push. And she's been a tremendous influence. Kayla absolutely loves her. It's interesting, too, because Rick and Kathy's kids were in college or in their career when this happened, just starting. And Kayla was the only one who was at home. And
okay,
she has a totally different outlook on this grief process than the others. Both of my sons have had struggles with their grief. And that's something they would have to address. But it's interesting to see how God used all of that. And even, let me say this too, for our church, as much as a church can or should be involved in the grief process of a pastor and his wife, I think Redemption Church, formerly North Mobile, has been an outstanding church to allow us freedom. My staff has been very helpful and protective to allow me the freedom to grieve and to process it through. And I have a deep appreciation. The other thing too is it has created a credibility for the gospel in this community. Mm-hmm. And we're grateful for that.
How often do you hear from a pastor who's lost his wife in an accident or an illness that's out of season? So I'm not talking about older retired where death is not as uncommon, but how many times do you hear from someone or a former pastor's wife whose the husband was killed or something like that, Kathy? You might hear, is that a frequent
Marty,
thing? Is it once a year? Is it just never?
You know what? I have seen Ed, because let's be honest, when men lose their spouse, they're just not wired, nor are the other men around them wired to really bring comfort and care and community to them.
I would agree.
I have watched Ed step into widowed men's lives with so much compassion and strength and honesty. And I can count two or three on my hands that I feel like he saved their lives.
Wow.
And, women can huddle, women can gather. It's just easier for us to find strength in numbers, but men will isolate, and that's the worst thing. And to be honest, there's been some other visible men, the Southern Baptist Convention, that Ed has mentored and stood alongside. And, there's some hard stories. There's some funny stories of them, of men suggesting women they have met, and Rick and Ed had to say, get away from her. And so, the backstory of some Southern Baptist leaders that needed support. And it's been a joy for me to watch him do that, because it's just not easy for men to reach out for help.
Is Ed having to channel his daughter and tell him not to marry a bimbo?
Yeah, I think he's repeating kind of what he may have heard. I don't know.
Oh, me. Well, my guests today on Pastor Talk have been Ed and Kathy Litton. And if you're listening, I really hope that you will pass this one around. I don't ask for that a lot, but there's a lot of impact in this story, in their stories. And so if you know someone who could benefit from it, and actually every pastor could, if you haven't experienced it yourself, it gives you a little bit more insight into the grief process, because our churches are filled with people who are grieving. So guys, thanks so much for being on again today.
Listen, it's our pleasure, Marty. We love you, and thank God for what you do to help encourage pastors.
Hey, and Marty,
could you like record that and just text that to me, Ed, so that I can listen to it over and over?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Marty, you do owe us a dinner for this at some point.
It's Dallas this year, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we'll be looking for that.
All right, dinner's on me. I hope y'all like Chipotle.
We do.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duren. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duren.